Thank you, everyone. This is the regularly scheduled meeting of Public Safety and Transportation. Here at the start of the meeting, I have members of the committee, John Oliver from Ward 1, Tariq Lucas from Ward 2, Julia Maliki, I thought I saw her here from Ward 3. Yes, here she is. Chris Markowitz, Vice Chair from Ward 4. Myself, Andrea Downs, I'm the Chair from Ward 5. Alicia Bowman from Ward 6. Becky Grossman from Ward 7 and Rick Lipoff from Ward 8. That gives us a full contingent. Also here at the start of the meeting, I have Chief John Carmichael. Welcome, Chief. And I don't see anyone else from this city, but Danielle, you'll let me know if we do, yes?
Councillor Humphrey's also joining us.
Oh, I'm sorry, Councillor Humphrey. Not a member of the committee, but very welcome. So we are starting with, we are discussing three things together. And members of the committee and City Council, the sheet here was sent over, multi-page chart on the Newton Police Department response to Newton Police Reform Task Force recommendations, which will be the focus of tonight's discussion, but I'll read the docket items. They're number 138-21, discussion with the administration on the Newton Police Reform Task Force, PS&T requesting a discussion with the administration on the recommendations and matters pertaining. 272-21, Councillors Norton et al. Requesting quarterly updates from the mayor and police chief to the Police Reform Task Force and Public Safety and Transportation Committee on the progress toward implementing task force recommendations. And 248-21, Councillors Bowman et al. Requesting a discussion with the Newton Police Department on training, including discussion of training that supports the Police Reform Task Force recommendations for additional training for officers on systemic racism, behavioral health, and cultural responsiveness to marginalized communities. Discussion should include what training officers and others, what training courses, I assume, officers and others are attending, internal and external, including overview of the content, who is receiving the training, and an assessment of effectiveness. And at about 8 o'clock, we will adjourn to join the Programs and Services Committee, I hope. So with that, I'm going to open the floor up to you, Chief Carmichael, and welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'd just like to open by saying it's been 5 months, and I'm honored to be the chief of the Newton Police Department.
I meant to ask, how's Leo doing?
Leo's doing just fine.
Okay.
He was at the state. Whenever you talk about Leo, though, you also have to talk about Officer Lau. We can't forget him. Leo and Lau. But I just want to say it's been a great experience so far. As I get out of the station and I go around the city, I'm just amazed at the people that come out and introduce themselves and let us know that we have their support and they're friendly, and it makes me be excited for the future of the department. It's really been a tremendous welcome, and I'm very grateful for that. I think we're also very fortunate to have the caliber of officers that we have here. As I get to meet them and know them, the officers, the dispatchers, our civilian staff, the parking control officers, the crossing guards, just an incredible group of people who really do an exemplary job for the city. And it's I've just found that they're very committed, and they are very invested in the community. They're very tied in, which is really a great thing to see, and extremely compassionate people too. So that's been very fun for me to kind of see as things as I've transitioned and getting used to the city and everything. But certainly a special group of people who sacrifice a lot for the city. And, you know, I've seen them do some incredible things over that time frame so far. So thank you for having me here. And I thank the city council for all your support as bringing me here as your chief. And as I continue to transition and identify some of the issues that we're looking at through the our response to the Newton Police Reform Task Force recommendations. As you know, can you hear me?
I wanted to interrupt briefly just to say that we've been joined by Chief Financial Officer Maureen Lemieux. Sorry, go ahead.
Hi, Maureen. Okay, so if I may, would you like me to kind of go through the chart? And, you know, if there's any questions, we can kind of address. I created the chart just to try and help us get along with, you know, how we can look at achieving the recommendations that were provided by the Newton Police Reform Task Force. And as you see, as you go through them, a lot of them also involve POST, because Police Officer Standards and Training Commission, which is the new law for police reform here in Massachusetts, a lot of it aligns with what we have to do for POST. And many of it is standards that kind of apply to both. So in the first one, improving relationships between the Newton community and the Newton Police Department and police oversight, there's three objectives for that one. First one being ensuring ongoing dialogue and mutual accountability between the Newton community and the department. So the Police Officer Standards and Training Commission, I talked about a little bit last week, but going forward, any type of complaints and everything, anything that gets submitted to the department must be submitted to POST within 2 days. Public Safety and Transportation Committee, what we're doing here is also a place where I hope to have that dialogue and that accountability and kind of the review of our achievements on the recommendations as we go forward. As you mentioned, quarterly. So we look forward to making progress every time that, you know, we come back to that. These posts will deal with citizen complaints, internal affairs. Public records has now changed so that public records are accessible via for any type of internal affairs or disciplinary records. There are also other safeguards built in our courts, such as the Brady disclosure, and having to, this also aligns with the Newton Police Task Force accountability, where any type of exculpatory evidence, whether it might be an officer that could have been involved in a crime or untruthfulness, or any time when there's a credibility issue as a witness, that has to be disclosed to the district attorney's office under a Brady disclosure. And then we have a very significant case, if you ever have a chance to look at it, is the Commonwealth versus Long case, which hearings have already begun here in Massachusetts, where if there's any type of inference of bias during a motor vehicle stop or an arrest, that can come up as part of the court proceedings. And the department would have to rebut any of those inferences. So there's a lot of other safeguards that surround this. Ensuring feedback.
Can I just clarify that quickly?
Yeah.
It's inference of bias in a stop or in an arrest?
Either. So if they stopped and issued a citation or say it was even a suspended license, the underlying obviously reason for that stop, the reasonable suspicion that caused the stop in the first place, would have to be identified. But then that person, the motorist or defendant in arrest, could raise any type of an inference if they felt that stop was biased. And so if that is raised, if it's a criminal case, there's a motion, and that motion might be to suppress the stop or even to dismiss further on if there was bias that was found. But they would have to present that in the court as a motion, and then there would have to be obviously a ruling made by the judge.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. ensuring feedback regarding the behavior of NPD, swift and ongoing. So as I mentioned last week, there are significant oversight of police officers in Massachusetts now. We have the Division of Police Certification, which all police officers, including me, have to be certified by the commission. And that Division of Police Certification covers officer certification standards, a database that has all officers in Massachusetts, active officers in that database, and they are also the agency that certifies the department. You also have another branch of that that is Division of Police Standards, and that is the complaint database and investigation. So anytime a complaint...
Thank you. If we need to, we will reconvene as a webinar. Go ahead, Chief. Sorry about that.
Yeah. So the Division of Police Standards, so they have the complaint database. So any complaint that's filed to post or through the police department, we'd have to submit it within 2 days. They can do audits of our IA system. And they also have the ability to suspend, revoke, or even cause for retraining of officers for certain things, depending on what the actual situation is. And then, so you go on to increase in communication and connection between the community and NPD. This is going to be a perpetual thing where I can say that our practices, our policies, our procedures, our philosophy, and creating a culture in the department that will be focused on community policing and 21st century policing. Community policing being, the main tenets of that are organizational transformation. So the department molding itself in the philosophy of community policing. Problem-oriented policing, which really means getting to the root causes or the underlying issues of crime and fear of crime or the issues that we're dealing with throughout the city, and community partnerships, getting out there, engaging the community, and having different ways of doing that. One of the things that I plan on doing, and we've already started this, is creating a community engagement plan, and that is done through a presidential executive order from that talks about safe policing for safe communities. And some of the things that we've built into that plan will be programs like our positive tickets. So catching kids doing right. That's one program that we started already where if we catch kids doing right in the community or doing an unselfish act, or if they, random act of kindness type of thing, and officers catch them, we issue them what's called a positive ticket. And we've partnered up with businesses in the community to help us with that program. Cabot's was with the first one, DNA, Indulge, Anton's Pastries, and Sweet Tomatoes have all joined on. So that's a good way to establish partnerships. And then our community resource dog is one program, another program that we've implemented, and our dog is going to be trained over the next 18 months to work in the community to deal with any type of traumatic situations, critical incidents, social emotional learning in our schools with children. And I think it's going to be a very successful program. The dog will also be trained in search and rescue to help find people who are prone to wander and that type of thing. So really look forward to Leo growing up and really helping the department and the community as a whole. And one of the things we also did is we put two new officers into our community services bureau to help us with our community engagement strategies. One is a sergeant and one is an officer who will be working in there. We plan on doing that this week. So we want to kind of beef up our community services bureau.
Got it.
So moving.
Do you want to take a little break between sections to take questions? Otherwise, I'm afraid we're going to get kind of lost in the tangle.
Whatever you like.
Do you think? What does the committee think? Do you have any questions at this point? No questions. Anyone from we've been joined by Councillor Crossley. Welcome. Councillor Crossley, Councillor Humphrey, you have any questions on this section? Okay. The other thing I wanted to ask about, to perhaps for a future meeting, is to get a little bit of more explanation of what you mean by organizational transformation, mm-hmm. and perhaps a look when you're ready at the community engagement plan, because both of those sound very interesting and something that we might be able to help inform the community about. Okay, yeah. Let's go to the next.
Sure. So ensuring racial, ethnic, gender diversity among police personnel and leadership, and it also talked about leaving the civil service system. So there's a few objectives in this one as well. Developing strategies for hiring and promoting NPD personnel. And I won't read the whole thing, but that's essentially the gist of that objective. And finding ways to increase diversity within the police department. So there's a lot to this issue right now. And I'll say that, so the post commission is going to have a task force that's going to be looking at civil service, and they're going to examine it, and they're going to come up with recommendations. And there'll be possibly be legislative changes to it that they will, come together at the end after they look at that. And there could be changes to civil service in that system. You know, there's pros and cons to it, like everything else. Recruitment in Massachusetts is substantially lessened right now. The list that we do have 31 people that took the civil service list this past year, and we just got that list come out in September. So we only have 31 people on there. It is somewhat of a diverse list, but it's a very short list. We will go through that list probably within the first 6 months of the new year. We do always, through civil service, you always have the issue of applying for race and gender-based lists. And if, you know, the issue of getting out of civil service, that is a significant bargaining issue. And so, you know, we can you look at that issue, but also standing by and waiting to see what happens with this, with the post commission and with the changes or reform to the civil service system that I think that we can expect. On developing and implementing outreach and recruitment strategies, I know that the Newt Police Department did do a lot of recruitment strategies for this last exam, and we can certainly do more. Unfortunately, like I mentioned, we have 31 candidates on our list right now. So we're going to have to seek ways to look at recruiting other people. We will definitely get outside of the City of Newton list, and we will be on the statewide list, as I said, probably in the first probably 6 months of the new year. So not only do we have to do recruitment, we have to somehow start drawing people back into being interested in the policing field in and of itself. There's, you know, I don't know what to attribute it to, but I know this, that the last couple of days I've been at Mass Chiefs in Service training, and we're not alone. There is significant amounts of people not taking the test right now in Massachusetts, and it's going to have an effect undoubtedly on our recruitment and on hiring of police officers. Include language about the specific role Newton would like for its police to play, the guardians versus warriors. So this also is something that needs to be built into the campaigns. But the police, one of the big things that we did since I've been here is that we started our Newton Police values. And what we did is, I believe that when you establish the values for the organization, that you have to align that with the personnel of the department. In other words, I don't want to tell the Newton Police Department, these are our values and you follow these. What I like to do is have their input and what their values are and what they believe in, and take those values and try to align those with the organization. And when you do that, usually it's pretty successful. And what we came out with is, ironically, is that, you know, many of the 21st century policing tenets. Respect and fairness, integrity, trust, compassion, accountability, character. Those are types of values that our police officers, our dispatchers, even our civilian personnel hold dear to themselves. So those are things that We have helped to create our value system, which, you know, can align with each other and something that we know that everybody believes in. Okay. Ensuring that the department understands and meets the community safety needs and some of the objectives, ensuring NPD personnel have effective ongoing training to guarantee proficiency in areas of critical importance to the Newton community. It talks about the impacts of historic and systemic racism, best and emergency practices for responding to behavioral health issues, and cultural response to basically marginalized communities. So we're going to be doing a lot in this area, and a lot of it's going to start with training. The first thing is our training facility and needing a training facility that is conducive to doing training to begin with. And the city is already working towards that through capital improvement plans and making sure that we have a state-of-the-art training facility that we'll be able to use. I know that the National Guard Armory is a location that we're likely going to be able to use temporarily in the meantime. So that's good. I'm a big proponent of FBI leader training because that will give us our leadership training for our first line supervisors, our command staff, our executive officers, and helping with executive development. We have already trained officers, and this is right from the task force recommendation in ICAT, integrating tactics and communication, which is a de-escalation training. We have three officers that are trained as train the trainers to train the rest of the department. We were accepted to Project ABLE, which is an organization and a philosophy that's done through Georgetown University. I'll get into that a little bit more, but Project ABLE really focuses on some of the issues that you've seen that have come up in policing lately, such as duty to intervene and active bystandership, which means, you know, if an officer were to see excessive force, for example, that they have this duty to intervene and then a duty to report that. And that is, I just want to mention that that's a good thing to do, but duty to intervene has been something that has occurred here in Massachusetts since 1983. Commonwealth versus Adams was the case. It was an SJC case, and officers have been trained on that and have been, you know, exposed to that for my whole career. So I just wanted to mention that. Some of the other training. So, as I mentioned, Project ABLE, again, that's to create a support culture and peer intervention. We have, I've identified Cox and Associates, and the man's name is Gerard Cox, who's helping us with framework on addressing basically all of those topics, all of those bullets. We are working with him to develop a training framework that will address all of those things. And it would be probably a substantial training. If you would like, you could go on. It's Cox Associates here, and I believe it's in West Roxbury. He's worked with Boston Police Department, Brookline, and I believe Framingham. And I think that he is really going to help our department with our responsiveness to all of these types of issues. Intervention training, we joined the One Mind campaign. Crisis intervention training, again, is also nothing new, but it's something that we will continue to focus on with the goal of training all officers in the department in crisis intervention training, mental health first aid. As you know, we have a co-response type of model right now that we've already been using. We have a clinician in the department that assists us with our Community Services Bureau, and we deal with substance use disorder, domestic violence, mental illness, mental health calls. And so we have a lot of connections for resources and follow-up aside from just responding to some of these calls. We do also now have a crisis intervention team, which is huge. That's very significant. Health and Human Services out of City Hall, partnering up with the police department, Newton Wellesley Hospital, NAMI, DMH, clinicians from different areas of group homes in the community, the courts, probation. So there's a community crisis intervention team that is now in place, and we've already been doing some of the case studies and applying resources to that so that we have a team approach to some of these issues that we're dealing with. And there's a lot of them. I can tell you that it's a substantial issue public safety-wise, public health-wise that we're dealing with right now. We got a TI simulator to help us with our training in use of force and de-escalation techniques. And I'll talk about our training curriculums towards the end, but we have been working towards procedural justice training for several years now. And I'll go through some of the lists of the things that we've been training on as we go along. On the
before you go to the next one, what is TI short for?
It's a training simulator though, that basically there's a screen and everything, and you can set it up for different scenarios and the officers to react, and it can be responsive. So, you know, if the officer's trying to de-escalate a situation, it will actually kind of modify itself as it goes through to kind of work with how the officers handle the situation. So
thanks.
It's going to be a good training for our department. So going down to one of the things about, so they talk about staffing, right? So our staffing, from my understanding, the department years ago had till 200 officers, and currently we're at about 140, 142, and we're budgeted for 149. One of those issues is it's tough to recruit right now. We have a couple of officers coming out of the academy, an officer coming out of the academy. We've got a couple of academy trained officers for this month coming up. But that's going to be something again. Keeping staffing, maintaining staffing is going to be a big deal. We're right now with the department is at about 1.6, 1.7 officers per 1,000. And typically around Massachusetts, you will see anywhere from about 1.5 officers per 1,000 to 2.1 officers per 1,000. That's just one measurement to look at. There's obviously many other things you could look at, such as Part 1 and 2 crimes, calls for service, incidents reported, 911 calls, and very importantly is community engagement. If we're at any time that the police department wants to have the philosophy of community engagement, you have to be able to free up the officers to do that. They have to be able to have the time to pull over at a school, go to a playground, stop in a village, get out and walk. They need to have that freed up time, as opposed to, you know, the whole purpose of community policing was to get back to get away from that narrow focus on crime and broaden that horizon back to community engagement and community policing. So it comes down to they have to have the time to do it. All right. So
you have a number of measurements in your bullet points, which I appreciate. That might be one of the data reports that we get on occasion, quarterly basis.
Yeah, and that type of thing also, you can do a lot of comparisons. So we could, you know, look at Waltham and Watertown and Brookline and in our area and see, you know, where they're at and what they're doing for community policing and compare our responses and 911 calls to them, and then, you know, try and come up with a staffing plan, staffing numbers.
Might be also interesting to compare it over time. And yes. So last year versus this year versus, yeah. Okay, thanks.
Sure. One of the objectives, use improvements in data collection and management capabilities to increase transparency and accountability in police operations. So this here, obviously this public safety and transportation is a very good place to have this type of dialogue. And anytime there's questions or we want to talk about data, we can always do that. I know some of the things that since I've come here with what they're tracking, suspicious person calls, it's very important to have a policy on that. We have a pretty good policy on making sure that when we receive suspicious person calls, there are questions asked, that it's not just a blanket. There's a person in front of my house, and, you know, perhaps they look a certain way or whatever else. We want to ask more questions on that and make sure that the officer has more information when they get there. If it is a serious situation where there's reasonable suspicion to believe a crime could have been committed, we want to be able to make sure that we have enough information to stop that person and perhaps engage them and find out what they're doing. But we have been tracking all of those calls. So that's a good thing. As I mentioned, the long hearings, you know, the long hearings where somebody makes a claim that an officer, you know, they make an inference of bias. These cases have been happening all over the state of Massachusetts. And I've talked to D.A. Ryan, and they have also happening around Middlesex County. To my knowledge, the Newton Police Department has not had a single long hearing since the case law went into effect, which is pretty incredible. I know in my previous department, we had already had a couple of them, and I'm sure that in the future there will be more, but I thought that was pretty good that we haven't had any.
Yeah.
The other big issue with data collection is statewide. So if you probably recall the hands-free law that passed, right? Mass General Law, Chapter 90, Section 63, the hands-free, you can't text and drive or read messages when you're driving. That law initially had a lot of data collection in it, and it was taken out. And what happened is when the Justice, Equity, Accountability, and Law Enforcement Act passed, the Police Reform Bill, when that passed in December of this last year, it took that language and put it into that law. So all of the data collection stuff is now under the hands-free law. And so it changed what happened. So what happens is now the Registry of Motor Vehicles has to collect data from all warnings, citations, and arrests made by every police department in the Commonwealth. It has to be submitted to the registry on those citations. The registry then has to take it and submit it to Executive Office of Public Safety and Security, which provides an annual report. Now, they're supposed to have a college or a university that's going to be looking at a lot of that data and breaking it down. But what it's going to track is warnings, citations, arrests. It will include age, race, gender, the traffic infraction, the date and time, the municipality where it happened, and whether or not the vehicle was searched as a result of that stop. And then whether the stop resulted in a warning, a citation, or arrest. Now, if a department violates that and they're found to be biased in any way, there's a penalty for the department itself. And that would include that they would have to collect data on any stop that's made, not just ones where there's a warning or a citation issued. And they would have to be subjected to further implicit bias training. So it's built right into the statute that there's a the way that that's supposed to be handled. And if the way that under the new post law, any time that there's an instance of racial profiling, if that was found, then there's a possibility of a civil issue with the Attorney General's office. So other improvements, the department purchased Benchmark, which will help us track our use of force and our de-escalation. One of the things that you hear a lot is that we want to track use of force, but what we also want to capture is, you know, how many types of force are used and making sure that use of force is applied appropriately. but also we want to look at de-escalation, right? Because let's just say within a year's time frame, an officer's involved in three use of force incidents. What's really also important is how many incidents was the officer involved in where they de-escalated, where they applied de-escalation techniques and they were successful, because that's very important to capture as well. And then so the databases, okay, so all information, the post-public database, the database that they create is going to be tied into a national certification index. So even before you hire an officer, you have to check it through this index to make sure that they've never been decertified by another agency in another state. Then you have the Division of Certification and the Division of Police Standards, which I mentioned earlier. We have already submitted all of our records to POST as of September 30th, 2021. We were able to get it in. That was the deadline. The Newton Police Department got it in by the deadline. Unfortunately, the POST Commission is not completely set up yet, so they changed the deadline on us to, I believe it's December 31st. So we're all kind of in limbo right now as far as the data, but we also made sure that officers in the department had the opportunity to review their personnel file and look at their disciplinary file if there was any discipline in the past. And so all of those records, including me, had to be submitted to POST, every police officer in Massachusetts. And at some point, that will be publicly available in a searchable database that is provided by POST.
And that'll be very helpful. Chief, I'm just cognizant of time and that we have a second committee join around 8 o'clock. So
okay.
Perhaps let's not read the rest of that section and go right into number 4.
Okay. Number 4. Okay, let's go to number 4. Number 4, so support a healthy, inclusive culture within the police department through a culture change initiative, emphasizing a customer service orientation and a guardian mindset. So this is some of these, this one also has three objectives. Implementing a culture change initiative, cultivating customer service, improving procedural justice. I'm going to talk about the training again that our officers have had, because this particular one here, this is something that organizationally, that transformation, the cultural transformation of the department, that's going to be something that we're going to focus on. And I'll tell you how we'll do that. But also in Massachusetts, going back to 2015, when the recommendations of 21st century policing came out, our officers have been trained in every facet of that and then some, and I'll explain that in a minute. But these other things, improving procedural justice, improving bias-free policing, we have policies and procedures on that. We train on that. But Jerry Cox from Cox Associates, that's going to be another place where we're going to build in. He's going to help us with that framework to deal with these things. That's what he does. He basically works with cultivating different culture in the organization, providing orientation for the department to do that. One of the things he's big on, which I really like, is it's not going to be like him and me. It's going to be, he really wants to talk to our bureau commanders, our captains, our lieutenants. He wants to have face to face with our first line supervisors and then with our officers. So he wants to, he's going to spend a lot of time of getting input and then kind of going from there, on different, trainings and things that he can provide for us, helping us along those lines. The focusing on procedural justice and problem oriented policing. John Sheff from Law Enforcement Dimensions is going to be the person that I would like to use to bring in a continuing education for our officers on procedural justice, fair and impartial policing. But not just that, I want him to come in and tie that in to legal update, criminal law, constitutional law, Fourth Amendment, search and seizure, probable cause, reasonable suspicion, how all of those things align with fair and impartial policing, procedural justice. And so we want to, because that's what police officers have to apply on the street. They have to have the knowledge of these different things and how they connect on the street. So that's where we would be focusing on there. And then as far as problem-oriented policing, our policies and procedures deal with that right now. We are an organization now that does not just go to call to the next call to the next call. We're trying to work as a department that, like, again, gets to the root causes of crime, gets to the root causes of mental health issues, using all of the resources we have at our disposal, such as the community crisis intervention team or our jail diversion clinician or different organizations that we have, that we've partnered with and that can help us with our different responses that we need to make. So going back to the training issue and procedural justice, fair and impartial policing, every police officer in Massachusetts, going back to 2016, has been trained in procedural justice, police legitimacy, implicit and explicit bias, not just once, but they had that 2 years. They're going to have it again this year. The dynamics of addiction and substance use disorder, Alzheimer's and dementia intervention, use of force, de-escalation, police involvement with youth, and a big change that we'll be making very soon will be new policies on de-escalation with dealing with youth, because that's part of the police officer standards and training, but also part of the new police reform law. Domestic violence, sexual assault, officer wellness. And officer wellness is a very important one that we also plan on dealing with, because the job is extremely stressful. And we want to make sure that our officers have all of the support they need. They have the outlets that they need, and that they're healthy. And we're going to make sure that we do that. Some of the other trainings, the ICAT training, which is right out of the task force recommendations, dealing with people with mental illness, that's right out of the recommendations, non-bias-based policing, racial profiling, dealing with people with disabilities. So when you talk about the training and the direction that Massachusetts has been following and continues to follow, we're way ahead of the rest of the country as far as some of these things, which is very good. And we also even, our Community Service Bureau focuses on problem-oriented policing. We have people that deal with every one of the, social issues that we're dealing with, whether mental health, whether they're substance use disorder, domestic violence. We deal with all of it, and we follow up and help people get the resources that they need following those incidents. And then we have what's called a fourth platoon. We have officers that go out and deal with our Section 35s. For example, people that you have a commitment for alcohol or substance abuse.
Okay. That was what I was going to ask about, was what is your fourth platoon and Community Services Bureau? Sounds like they've got a lot on their plate. You also talk about the cumulative stress on officers, I believe.
Yeah, and that's going to be that we're not doing enough there. We have to do a lot more for our police officers. The cumulative stress on them is substantial. Just since I've been here in 5 months, I've seen them go to some awful situations and some awful calls. And, we know that, unfortunately, many police officers have, succumbed to suicide and things like that. And we want to make sure that they are healthy and they're well, and that they have the resources that they need when they need to have the outlets and they need support. I want to look at a toolkit where we hopefully set up a committee within the department to look at what we can do to make sure that the officers are supported. We have critical incident stress management, CISM, which is tied into the Greater Boston CISM unit. We have officers that are trained in that. One of the things that I want to work on is the confidentiality aspect of that, because if police officers don't feel that they can go and sit down with somebody and talk about whatever it is that they're dealing with, and that's going to get leaked out or be talked about, or we want to make sure that they're protected and that information that they share is confidential. And the law actually requires that. Governor Baker passed the law a couple of years ago and make sure that that's in there. But really, you know, diffusing situations, debriefings, after action reviews are very important going forward, and making sure that when we do go to critical incidents that, you know, we check up on them. We make sure that they're all right after they deal with the traumatic situation.
If we're going to number five, I think we can skip the leaf blower discussion because that happens after.
Sure. So
straight into other stuff.
Refine the scope of policing by developing alternative response strategies to for community concerns. So this is the stuff that I really enjoy, and I'm very excited about for the police department and for the city of Newton, because as I mentioned, the Community Service Bureau is a huge asset to the department, as they all are, the Traffic Bureau and patrol. Everybody is very critical to our mission, but they are the ones that they're following up on juvenile issues. Like I said, substance use disorder, mental health, child abuse, sexual assault, hate crimes, hate incidents, all of those things that, that occur a lot in the community, and making sure that we have the resources and very well-trained officers that can deal with those things. The community crisis intervention team, like I mentioned, is really just started, I think, a little bit before I came here. I know I've been working in one for a long time now, and they're very successful. You know, not every case is going to be successful, but all of the resources that you need to deal with somebody that's suffering from some type of either mental health issue or a substance use issue or domestic violence or something like that, all of those resources are there. Newton Health and Human Services, Deb Youngblood and Megan Kenny have been great partners and really getting this thing up and running and getting us going. A couple other good things, the drug health court, the drug court session next door at the Newton court is very successful. And I've been working with Judge Heffernan on creating a new mental health court session. There's a lot of support for that from the department and from probation, from defense attorneys, from the judge. And so we think that over the next few months, we're going to be able to implement a mental health court session next door. Section 12s and 35s, police officers all, you know, have that ability under the statutes to help people in a mental health crisis or substance use issues. And we are also part of the C4RJ, or the Communities for Restorative Justice Task Force, which is also chaired with the district attorney's office, and these are done through referrals when somebody believes that restorative justice will work with a defendant and help them to, you know, seek to repair the harm that was caused by victims, provide some alternatives to punishment. And with these cases, obviously, everybody has to be on board as far as the judge, the DA, the defense attorney, the police department, and most specifically, most importantly, the victim themselves, so that they can kind of come to a resolution on some of those cases. And I think some of that stuff's kind of repetitive. And one of the other things too is that's coming up is the UNT visas. I don't know if you're familiar with these, but Mass General Law 258F, Section 1. So one of the big issues is with people who, they don't have a residency here in the country, but they may be afraid to report a crime or to step forward as a witness. And so the law actually provides an incentive for people that if they are a victim of crime or if they are a witness to a crime, that the police department and organizations can work together to provide visas for them. The U visa is basically for a crime victim or a witness, and the T visas are designed for people who are subject to human trafficking and that sort of thing. And as you may know, one of our officers is assigned to the FBI task force, which oversees a lot of the human trafficking cases that we see here, and they do happen right here in Massachusetts. So, and so I think that, you know, that's kind of where we are right now. You know, and I look forward to, like I said, progressing these things, and digging deeper and trying to, accomplish each of these things that have been, suggested.
Great. Any questions from the committee? Or from counselors listening in? Okay. Counselor Grossman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chief, for an incredibly detailed, thoughtful, and comprehensive presentation on where we are. And there's obviously hours we could discuss on many of these topics, and I know we have 7 minutes before the next committee joins us. So I'm going to keep my question to one main one that I've been thinking about as you've been talking, which is how do you feel morale in the department is right now among your colleagues? And have you seen change over, I know, the short 5 months that you've been here along those lines?
That's a good question. I don't know. but, I mean, it seems to me that everybody, it's a great police department. We have amazing people. And everybody seems to, you know, be upbeat. I think that, I mean, from my perspective, I think that I've tried to do things since I've been here already and, you know, the 5 months that I've been here to try and make things better. And I tell them that that's why I'm here. You know, I'm really not, I was a chief already, so it's not like that's what I'm trying to do. I'm here to try and make this department better, make the city feel better and feel better about the police department and do the things that, you know, do our mission, do the things that we're tasked with doing and doing the things that the city expects us to do. And hopefully keeping it more positive. You know, there's so much negativity in policing itself that I hope that if I do anything, I can bring some more positivity to it, whether, you know, little things like the positive tickets program or Leo coming in. And, you know, today Officer Law brought Leo over to the station and it makes me happy to see like that put a smile on an officer's face and go over there and, you know, play with the dog a little bit for a minute and take their mind off or whatever else is going on for that short period of time. And, you know, just trying to, bring some of the fun back into this job. And so I hope, I wasn't here before. I know morale came up in some of the interview processes and a lot of morale, you know, that comes from, it's a hard job. It's a hard job. They've been through a tough time with the reform stuff and with, the pandemic and everything else. And it's a difficult job and you want to just make them feel supported and valued. And hopefully I'm doing that. Because if they do feel valued and supported, they're gonna be happier to come to work, and they're gonna hopefully do a better job.
Well, I will yield over to my other colleagues. I'll just say that I think that positivity and you know, the set of values and goals that you bring to the job has been palpable not only from you but also from at least how it feels to me, the interactions. And the tone of the conversation, as well as the dedication in moving forward on everything that you've laid out here, it feels positive to me as we are moving through it. I really appreciate that from you and from your colleagues, and I'll be quiet now and let others speak. So thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Councillor Grossman. Councillor Lucas.
Thank you, Chair Downs. Chief Carmichael, I had a couple of questions, but I'll just ask one just out of respect of the time. Earlier in your presentation, you mentioned that there is a clinician or social worker who was on staff within the police department. I met her when I got a tour of the police station. I think it was back in April. And I haven't followed up with her or spoken with her about anything. But I just had a basic question. Is the clinician or social worker, what type of training does she get to handle the call volume that comes in? Like, what is the training?
Well, she works as a dual response type of model to mm-hmm. different types of situations. So mm-hmm. Just yesterday, we had a critical incident that took place and over in Chestnut Hill area. And we responded to that call, but she also comes out to that call. And she is there to, because this was a critical incident, she's there at that point to help assist the family, because the family's obviously just been exposed to this traumatic incident. And it's just great to see her interaction and her being able to calm the situation down, provide some solace to the family in a difficult time. Her training, I don't know, she right now her job is or her task is jail diversion clinician. But I think that it's today that she got her master's degree. So congratulations, Sarah. She just finished getting her master's and will have other types of certifications in the very near future. But she's she is a certified clinician, and that's what her position is right now. Did you ask the question about the job, how many calls and everything?
No, it was just really training, and what kind of training does she receive?
Yeah, so she's trained in, as I said, as a clinician, in situations such as crisis intervention and any types of situations, domestic violence, those types of calls that mental illness, that's where she comes in and follows up with. And also works with our courts for any types of situations, like I mentioned, if it's going to be a restorative justice type of incident, or whether it's going to be the mental health court or a drug court. She's very involved over there as well.
Okay, thank you, uh-huh. And and congratulations.
Yeah.
Okay, I have Counselor Markowitz followed by Counselor Malachy.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I hope this is a quicker answer, Chief. First of all, thanks for that presentation. I love the way it was laid out, you know, responses directed to the objectives. And I just think it's easy to work with and follow that up. I've heard from police officers in the city that they're not in favor of eliminating people taking the civil service exam. Do you have any understanding of why that might be? Like, what's, you know,
I'm sorry. They're not in favor of what?
Of taking the civil service. They're not in favor of exiting civil service.
Yeah.
And not having people go through the exam. So I'm just curious, what is the general reason why, you know, that you've heard at least or understand that people would have that position?
Well, so as you know, in the prior department I was in, we were in civil service and we got out. We withdrew from it 5 or 6 years ago. And I think a lot of it is the protection, because civil service does offer a certain level of protection for officers. And, it is the location for appeals. So if, you know, you were bypassed for a promotion or you were even bypassed for a position as a police officer, there's a location, there's a place to go as an appeal. So there's some protections that are built in the civil service system. And a lot of it is, you know, it's the way we've always done it here in Massachusetts. Civil service has been a very strong organization over the years, and it's something that we're used to. And so I think that has a lot to do with it as well.
That's helpful. I don't, maybe at another time to say, I assume that as we go forward, if we do leave civil service, that, you know, there's some way to that typically those types of concerns are addressed, you know, so you don't really have that aspect of it, but, you know, you still, yeah. You know, I'm going back to, I forget which, maybe a Councilor Grossman, but I certainly had the same question. I'm very concerned about morale, just given everything that's happened over the last couple of years. So that, I assume that plays into it. So I hope that, you know, if we're going that way, it seems that that's the direction we've been recommended to take. And I think there's a lot of support for that. But it's important to understand how we kind of restore, you know, the perception of we lost this, what do we get back type of thing. And certainly.
Yeah, we're pushing on 8 o'clock, Councilor Markowitz. So not to be rude or anything, but this will be a long, long, long process. It's not happening anytime soon.
I said I was just teeing it up for a future one, and I somehow always managed to find myself in that net, but I'm all set. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilor Maliki and then Councilor Bowman. And then we all, for those who've just joined us, we're about to leave this meeting and join the Programs and Services Committee, which is a separate Zoom. If you really want to hear about leaf blowers or school buses, that's the one you want to be in, not this one. Councilor Maliki, go ahead. Sorry.
Thank you. Real quick, Chief, in talking about the crisis intervention team, you said there are a lot of them, and I guess you meant cases that you're following with the goal of preventing them from becoming active crises. Can you give us an idea of kind of the volume of the workload?
So the crisis intervention team is designed to look at cases that have occurred, so responses that we've had. And what it, you know, it's that problem-oriented policing type of model where you're trying to get to the underlying root causes of the issue and preventing further types of situations occurring in the future. So when you have all of the resources that are available, such as the police department, our clinician, DMH, Riverside, the people at Newton Wellesley Hospital, when you have all of these resources together that look at that case, they can, as they work through the case itself, people are there to kind of provide the resources necessary for that individual or for that family to get the help that they need to hopefully prevent situations from occurring in the future. And not every one of them is successful. I mean, sometimes there's a lot of, you know, different barriers that you end up being exposed to, but they're very successful. They're very helpful in dealing with the situations that we're dealing with and having all of the people at the table at the same time.
Yeah, I was just trying to get an idea of like the volume and can you handle it with the number of people who are doing this?
Well, it's yes. The short answer is yes, but it's very new. It's just starting. We're still getting to learn to know each other. We're getting to start to bring in even more stakeholders that we didn't initially identify right away, such as probation and a representative from the DA's office. So we're going to continue to bring those people in, but we have already started doing some of the case studies. So that's very good.
Okay, thank you.
Fascinating. Councillor Bowman, and then we should probably move to the next.
All right, just a quick point of clarification. So the social worker is only available some of the time, is that correct? So is it yes. A department goal to get 24/7, have a social worker 24/7? Would you find that helpful?
We haven't yet discussed that. That's obviously something that we could look at. A lot of times, the issues that she's going to be dealing with are going to be things that you're going to have to deal with during the day, such as the, you know, going to court, going up to the hospital.
That I understand. I guess I'm more interested in when a social worker might be called out on a call to deal with someone, because that was my understanding part of her role, or is that not part of her role?
Yeah, no, she does. She does. She goes out to calls with officers. She does the follow-up with our officers from community services. She does the follow-up with our police prosecutor next door at court. She's very busy.
Yeah, that I can understand. It's the crisis calls that I was more concerned about.
So she only works so many hours in the day. So
right.
I'd like us to talk a little bit more about that in the future. Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that might be a pre-budget talk about social workers having more than one, but that's for another day. All right.
So, Madam Chair, did you say we have a different link to the other meeting?
We do. You'll want to go back to your agenda and scroll down, or go to the calendar and scroll down to the Programs and Services Committee. Am I correct, Danielle? So that's where we will be joining
yes.
Programs and Services for the rest of our meeting. The chief, I think you're also requested to be there, or somebody, to talk about enforcement of the leaf blower.
Yes.
Well, okay, we'll see you soon.
Councilor Downs, you're going to have to take a motion, please, on each item.
Sorry. A motion to hold. That's what I need. So moved. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. That's unanimous. Thank you.
Bye-bye.